It's working now, I'm sorry.
Somewhere around 1955, Van Zandt Williams became interested in the application of infrared to automatic measurements on the process streams in chemical companies. Mm-hmm. He thought this would be an application. He was always intensely interested in quantitative analysis, as I've mentioned. And so he started a project to design infrared instruments, infrared spectrometers, that would be rugged enough to to work in the in a process plant, chemical plant, where they there would be some of the liquid would go through a cell and then back into the stream and continuously monitor a particular wavelength of interest.
Hmm.
And so there were two products developed. One was called the Trinon, because it was a triple beam system, non-dispersive infrared. And the other one was, excuse me, I'm going to stop for a second.
Okay.
This group was set up and the chief engineer on the Trinon, which was a triple beam, what's called non-dispersive infrared system, and that was Elliot Woodall was the process engineer in charge of that. And then there was a second product called the Bichrometer, which was designed by Abe Savitsky, who was still working at that time. And this was an actual infrared spectrometer that had a split mirror so it could measure two wavelengths simultaneously and then continuously monitor those two wavelengths, which was a pretty good idea. And Perkin-Elmer invested more money in those two products that they had invested ever in anything before. And when it was finished, they were introduced, and there was quite some interest in the chemical business, chemical field. And then a very interesting thing was discovered, and that was that the chemical companies did not know the infrared characteristics, absorption of the materials that were in the streams. So in order to sell them a system, you had to absolutely pin down what was in those streams in order to make a measurement, because there might be some stuff that would come through that would give you false readings, and then if it shut down the plant or blew things up, that was not a good idea. So they kept asking these questions over and over. I can remember there was a big group up at Eastman Kodak that wanted to look at all the stuff that was in their film business.
Mm-hmm.
And DuPont and all kinds of companies. So this group that was put together, they did a lot of testing, but every time they would receive a sample from a customer, there would be no, it would make no sense, and they could never make a measurement. So this was like $1 million later and no sales. And mostly because the customers did not know what was in these streams. They got a certain percentage of stuff which was of interest, you know, the main component, but there were a lot of other things that came boiling through. So it was a disaster, and it disappeared. It went undercover. Van Zandt Williams never talked about it again, nor did any of the people who worked on it. They were assigned to do other things. And those instruments just sat there. So one day Van Williams said to me, Vince, I want you to take over the Trinon and Bichrometer stuff as part of your applications group. And I said, I don't know anything about those machines. He said, well, there's not much to be done, but anyway, just take it over. So about a month later, I got a call from one of our sales guys who said that he'd been at General Motors, and General Motors had just introduced what was called the pneumatic springs on their cars.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to fill up these springs with air, and then they would bounce along on pneumatic pistons rather than on hard springs. And this was going to be a big thing. And General Motors was going to introduce this on all their cars the following year. And they needed to have a machine that would measure whether there was any leaks. So the guy called me and said, is there any way you can do that? And I said, well, can you put some helium or something in the air as a tag that we can identify and we can measure whether there's any leaks? And they said, oh yeah, we can do that. So I said, oh, we've got a whole bunch of machines here that'll measure all that stuff perfectly. We have about 50 of them in stock. So we sold all of these Trinons to General Motors, and then Ford came along and we had to go back into production because they were in competition to build more Trinons that had this ability to measure this one component. So
that was so fortuitous.
Yeah, so Van Zandt Williams then immediately started claiming credit for having this wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that quickly ran out. That was all the sales, but we managed to get rid of all of the inventory. So that was an interesting story in itself. Process control infrared. At the same time, Max Liston developed a measuring device. That's why I say it. He's still in that business. Because that became a successful system because it was designed, he did such a nice job of designing it that it was easy for people to set it up and to make these measurements, and it didn't require this very complex tuning up that the original Trinod did. So we had a saying in those days. The Trinod was called a closed loop measuring system. Maxie Liston, he's no dope. He did it all with an open loop. That was one of the things that we who were not involved in that project are making fun of it. Anyway, that's the story.
Did Perkin-Elmer ever really get into process control?
That was the end of it.
Once they
got rid of that inventory, they weren't about to get back into it because it was fundamentally incorrect to try to have this very complex tuning up of to make these things work, and when you really didn't know what the composition was.
Right.
So there were some infrared analyzers that were used in mines, coal mines, to detect whether there were stuff in the air that might cause things to blow up. There was a company called Mine Safety Appliances that built an infrared system, and they were very knowledgeable of that because they had a lot of other stuff they sold to coal mines and so forth. I'd like to talk to Max Liston sometime about just who he sells these things to, and maybe it's good business. This is another story. We're going to tell a story. There was another company who went into that business, and they got the order away from us. We came almost that close to getting an order from Dow Chemical Company. And they had a process, and they had built a multi-million dollar plant to make a certain chemical component. And so they wanted to make sure they were optimizing, getting the maximum amount of this chemical component from the process. So they bought this infrared analyzer from our competitor, which we didn't get the order. So the competitor put it on and then continuously monitored, and they kept tuning it, the temperatures and the adjustments, and then the compensation would go up, 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 and they were making more and more money. And 3 a.m. one day, the composition got to the point where the entire process in the pipe turned into a solid. It seems for everybody, doesn't it? But here was this multi-million dollar plant with this process stream with all of this solid stuff in it, and there was no way of solving the problem, no way of getting it out of there. So they had to just dump it. And the culprit was this infrared analyzer, which the company said, hey, you didn't, we just measured, you didn't tell us what the properties were. But that was the fault of the people who had designed the process. It's, in chemistry, it's called cis and trans. There's a cis and a trans thing, and they wanted more, have more trans and less cis or something. But anyway, that's a famous story from infrared process control. That sort of scared Nanometrics a bit too when they heard about that. So it shows that some of these things that seem simple on the surface are not so simple.
Mm. Well, great. I'll switch this back.